From the heart of our nation's capital, this is Washington Watch Weekend Edition. Now, here's your host, David Salkeld.
This week on the Weekend Edition of Washington Watch, a new Congress gets rolling, a bill is introduced to protect pharmacists, and negative data on the COVID shot was hidden. Greetings, fellow patriots. I am David Salkeld, and I'm a constitutional conservative, Christian husband, and Reagan Republican. Last week, I told you that we'd talk about the new Speaker of the House this week, but the new Congress introduced legislation so quickly that it's already old news. But I really want you to know why the process taking so long was such a good thing. So here's what I want you to do. Go over to TonyPerkins.com, scroll down about halfway, and just below Tony's daily devotional that we often talk about here, you'll find an article from Tony titled, "In McCarthy Victory, Everyone's a Winner, Except the Left." It's a good read and really explains the good that came out of the race for the speakership. One of the first good things that was hashed out with Speaker McCarthy was the agenda, and joining FRC's President Tony Perkins to discuss it is the new Majority Leader of the House of Representatives, Steve Scalise of Louisiana.
Congressman Scalise, welcome back to the program.
Hey, Tony, it's great to be back with you, and especially good to be back in the majority with Nancy Pelosi fired.
Well, let me congratulate you on your new position as the House Majority Leader. You've already announced the agenda moving forward, and I want to get to that. But first, I want you to touch on the new House rules package that was passed last night. There were some doubters, but Speaker McCarthy delivered. The leadership followed through on what they committed to last week. Why is this so important?
Yeah, Tony, why this is so important, and you saw the debate last week, is the debate that's been going on for a few months now, is Washington is broken. It's fundamentally broken. We needed to change the way that Washington works to empower members of Congress to actually fight for the people who are struggling out there, standing up against so many of these far-left radical agenda items that have created all the inflation, the energy costs, an open border. And so we had a lot of back and forth conversations with members how best to do it. But frankly, this is a debate that's been years in the making. I think people who watched last week were encouraged that they heard real debate on how Washington should work better. And, you know, the Democrats were going nuts. The left was going nuts, as was the media, because they knew this meant that their party was over. These, you know, thousands of pages of bills, of omnibus spending bills, $1.7 trillion dropped by dark of night, voted on the next day where nobody has a chance to read it. All kind of unrelated items that have nothing to do with basic government funding. That's the kind of stuff people have been sick of for a long time, Tony. And we had to get the rules right. And we spent a few days to do it. But ultimately, spending a few days to fix what's broken with Washington so that we can spend the next 2 years fighting so that Washington can stand up for the people who are struggling across America is refreshing. It's something that needed to happen a long time ago. And I'm glad we got it done and passed last night.
I want to play a clip of the minority leader, Hakeem Jeffries. He had this remark this weekend. Play clip number three.
And while the Congress was held captive this particular time, what is going to be a problem is if the American people will be held captive over the next 2 years to the extreme MAGA Republican agenda that apparently has been negotiated into the House rules and the functioning of the Congress.
Steve, you set the agenda as the Republican leader. You've already put out there, before we even had the debate last week over the speaker, what the priorities were going to be. Is this MAGA Republican agenda? It's an agenda that the American people supported Republicans and put them in charge to carry out.
Yeah, in fact, you know, if anybody was held hostage, it was families who were watching every month with crushing trillion-dollar bills here and trillion-dollar bills there, money borrowed from China, tax increases, regulations, open borders, families paying more at the grocery store for everything, higher energy costs. That's what's been crushing families, and it's the left who did it, the extremists on the far left, President Biden, Nancy Pelosi on down. And look, they're going to kick back. I can understand, you know, when the American people finally rejected that far left extremist ideology and said, we want Republicans to have the majority in the House to finally stop this madness. I can understand that these far leftists are going to push back, but you know what? We're going to push back too, because we're fighting for those families who have been left behind.
But they also benefit from the rules themselves by having a more open process. So I'm not quite sure what they're complaining about when they talk about these new rules. These new rules take the power from the speaker, which Nancy Pelosi grabbed for herself, and it devolves to the individual members.
Yeah, and this really gets to the heart of the differences between conservatives and big government socialists. They want power centralized. They wanted all the power bottlenecked into Nancy Pelosi's office, where, again, multi-thousand page bills were written by dark of night. You know, you remember Obamacare, the infamous, you got to pass the bill to find out what's in it. We found out what's in it. It's things that dramatically increased costs on families. It denied health care to millions of people who had plans that they liked. You know, if you like your plan, you can keep it. That promise and lie was broken to so many people. And so changing that relationship between Washington and the rest of America has needed to happen for a long time. And that's what the rules package does. If Democrats want to be a part of helping fix the problems they created, they now have the ability to file amendments too. You know, but we were shut out of the process. You talked about the Born Alive Act at the outset. And Tony, this is a bill that you've helped lead on to raise public awareness nationally. And Wagner's bill, where we tried over and over again, like you said, 80 times, Nancy Pelosi said no. And so we weren't able to bring a bill that says if a baby's born alive outside the womb, you can't kill that baby and call it abortion. It's murder. And yet now we're finally bringing that bill to the House floor tomorrow. We'll have a vote. I hope every Democrat votes for it. They should. But frankly, whether they vote for it or not, we're going to pass that bill. We're going to fight for those unborn. We're going to fight for our most vulnerable, and we're going to actually give a voice to members of Congress who have been shut out of this process for way too long.
And it shows a stark contrast between the priorities of the two parties, that Nancy Pelosi wouldn't even allow a vote on this over 80 times. But also last night, one of the first bills that you voted on pertained to the IRS and the fact that they're putting 87,000 agents out there. And it's interesting, data now come to the forefront that if you're in the lower economic income status, you're five times more likely to be audited. Is that what the Biden administration wants, to further harass hardworking men and women?
Yeah, and look, this was their agenda from day one. When they said they wanted to more than double the size of the IRS, just think about that. You know, there's about 80,000 people working at the IRS today. I have never gotten one phone call in my years in Congress of anybody asking me to add more people to the IRS. I get a lot of people saying we'd like more Border Patrol agents, but to say let's go from 80,000 to 167,000 IRS agents and allowing them to go after not the millionaires and the billionaires, it's going to be small business owners. It's going to be the single mom working two shifts at a restaurant. That's right. Who they wanted to go after. We had an amendment, by the way, to say that those new agents couldn't go after those lower income families. And every Democrat voted against it because they want to generate billions of new taxes to spend on far left socialist items at the expense of these hardworking families. Enough is enough. We passed the bill. Not a single Democrat voted with us, but we passed it to the Senate. So call your senator if you want to say, hey, we don't need another 87,000 IRS agents. Maybe let's put those people over at the border, securing our border. Right. Call your senator because the bill's over there now. And Chuck Schumer said he doesn't want to bring it up. Call your senator and ask him to stand up and vote and bring that bill to the floor.
Again, another sharp contrast between the priorities of the two parties. Steve Scalise, I know you have to go. Busy day for you. Thank you so much for taking time out. Looking forward to seeing this conservative agenda advance in the House. And you know what? It's a new day, Tony.
God bless America. And thanks for all you do to help promote having the changes that we finally got. Now let's go do the work fighting for those families who have been struggling for way too long.
All right. Steve Scalise, thanks so much for being with us.
God bless you.
You can find out more about Steve Scalise, as well as that article from Tony, when you visit tonyperkins.com. We also invite you to check out our new site, The Washington Stand. You can find the link as well at tonyperkins.com.
Persecution of Christians is growing globally and becoming more aggressive every year. Family Research Council's Leila Gilbert, Ariel Del Turco, and Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin's new book, Heroic Faith, highlights personal stories from those who endure religious persecution and takes a close look at the tragic circumstances Christians often face due to dangerous and sometimes deadly opposition to their faith. You can get your copy of Heroic Faith wherever books are sold, or by going to frc.org/heroicfaith.
Attention university students, are you looking to be equipped as a Christian leader and to influence the culture from a biblical worldview? Join us at Family Research Council for our internship program. With a speaker series focusing on careers and callings, lectures from prominent conservative leaders, and weekly biblical worldview training, you will grow personally and professionally. This paid 12 to 15 week program is designed to give you real world experience and to prepare you for wherever God calls you. Apply today at frc.org/internships. It is so important for God's children to spend time with Him in His Word, but it can be difficult to know where to start. We know that all Scripture is God-breathed and is useful for teaching, rebuking, correcting, and training in righteousness, and God uses it to prepare and equip His people to do every good work. That is why Family Research Council offers their Stand on the Word Bible Reading Plan. This plan will help you read the Bible daily so you can be transformed by God's Word. Sign up today by visiting frc.org/Bible.
Welcome back to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. I'm David Salkeld. Last week on this program, we talked about large-scale pharmacies like CVS and Walgreens beginning the paperwork to start carrying the abortion pill. This would not only make your local pharmacy the equivalent of an abortion facility, but it would make your pharmacist the equivalent of an abortionist. Joining Tony to talk about legislation in the House to protect pharmacists of conscience is Congressman Buddy Carter of Georgia.
The Biden administration continues to seek any and every avenue that it can to push its abortion on demand. Now, you've heard me discuss the FDA recently changed its rules to allow pharmacies to become abortion facilities and distribute chemical abortion pills. In fact, thousands of you have already signed the petition. And if you've not done so, I invite you to do this. Because Walgreens, CVS, they've stated, they immediately came out, same day that the FDA announced these new rules, they came out and said, hey, we want to do this. We're going through the certification process. We want to turn our neighborhood pharmacies into abortion facilities. I mean, they didn't say it like that, but that's the effect. So if you'd like to communicate to the heads of CVS and Walgreens, here's what you need to do. Simply text the word pharmacy, that's pharmacy, pharmacy, to 67742. 67742. 67742, the word pharmacy. You'll get a link, follow the link, and you can sign the petition, or you can go to tonyperkins.com. Well, in response, House Republicans have put forward a bill that bars employers or government from harming any health worker who refuses to fill a prescription they believe may be used to cause an abortion. Joining me now to discuss this and more is the co-author of the bill, Congressman Buddy Carter. He serves on the House Budget Committee and the House Committee on Energy and Commerce. He represents Georgia's 1st District, and for more than 32 years, he owned Carter's Pharmacy. See, he knows what he's talking about, and he's trying to help the community all these pharmacies are really central to community health. So joining us now by phone is Congressman Carter. Congressman, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Well, thank you for having me.
Before we go to your bill, yesterday, big day in the House with the Republicans after 80 attempts being blocked by former Speaker Nancy Pelosi. Within less than eight days, the Republicans passed the Born Alive Abortion Survivor Protection Act.
Yes. And I tell you, I was proud to vote for that, and I was proud that we passed it. That's good legislation. I mean, obviously, we in the Republican majority are intent on protecting life, and this was our opportunity to protect those sinners that have been attacked since the ruling by the Supreme Court, right, of Dobbs. And what we've seen is an uptick in violence against some of these groups, and you know they need to be protected, and that's the intent of the bill.
Yeah, that was the two measures that passed yesterday. Now, before I go to your bill, I'm going to play a clip from Congressman Jerry Nadler of New York, who was telling the Congress why Democrats were voting against the Born Alive bill. And I need you to interpret this for me, because I can't understand what he's saying. So play the Nadler clip, please.
That's why we oppose this bill, not because we don't think that babies born alive must be saved, but because we do think that babies born alive must be saved.
Can you explain that to me, buddy?
I'm afraid I can't. It makes no sense whatsoever, which is typical for the Democratic response to this and typical for the Democratic view on abortion. You know, they say they care about life, but yet they continue to push for what they say is pro-choice and to give women the right to control their bodies. You know, look, I'm a pharmacist and a healthcare professional, and we're trained to do no harm.
Right.
And that's the Hippocratic oath that healthcare professionals take. And it's just, again, it's just the typical Democratic response when we start talking about abortion.
Now, you and 25 of your colleagues sent a letter to the FDA last week because, look, the abortion industry is in retreat when it comes to what they've been doing for years in these abortion clinics, Planned Parenthood. So they're resorting to turning pharmacies into abortion facilities. And you and several of your colleagues sent a letter to the FDA calling on them to rescind this decision. Give us the status on that.
Well, we did send a letter in, and thus far we haven't gotten a response. Of course, it hasn't been very long, but in all fairness, but at the same time, this is not the first time that we've done it. We've sent letters in before protesting this. You know, when I was practicing pharmacy and I had a pregnant woman to come into my pharmacy, I was treating two patients. I was treating the mother and the child. And that's the way pharmacists are trained to look at the situation. We actually have two patients here. It was my responsibility to warn that mother if this medication would potentially harm that child. It was my responsibility not to dispense a prescription that was going to have a harmful effect on a fetus.
But the way they're treating this is that you're just another cog in the process, and you just have to mechanically do what someone else tells you to do.
It's as if pharmacists are nothing more than vending machines.
Right.
And, you know, and if that's going to be the case, then they should be, you know, just replace us with vending machines. Of course, I'm being facetious when I say that. But, you know, when I was serving in the Georgia State Legislature, I passed legislation at that time and sponsored legislation and had it passed at that time that would prohibit a company from disciplining a pharmacist who refused to dispense a prescription that they knew was going to be used for an elective abortion or that they knew Right. was going to cause harm to a child. And there are state laws on the books for that. But, you know, with the direction that this administration and that HHS are taking right now, we need even more protection.
Do you think you'll be able to get a measure through the House to do that?
We are. I have introduced the Pharmacist Conscious Protection Act, and essentially what that does is it's just another layer, if you will, of protection for pharmacists. As I say, there's already the rules on the book and laws on the book that would protect pharmacists, but we need even more if this is going to be the attitude, if you will, the direction that this administration is going to take. But what the Pharmacist Conscious Protection Act would do, it would strengthen the pharmacist's conscientious rights when Right. they're choosing whether to fill a prescription for elective abortions. And it would provide them with a private right to action so that pharmacists who object to dispensing that prescription or even keeping it in inventory.
Right.
When I own my pharmacies, I refuse to keep some of these medications in inventory. Well, I knew what they were used for.
Given the policies of this administration, it's critical that we provide those protections to the medical professionals. Buddy Carter, we're out of time. I want to thank you for joining us and look forward to tracking the process and progress of that bill.
Thank you very much.
All right. Folks, stick with us. We're coming back with more Washington Watch on the other side of the break.
With FRC's Stand Firm app, you will have access to all of our content right at your fingertips. The Stand Firm app provides you with a variety of resources, such as our most recent radio programs, social media posts, and Washington Stand articles. Additionally, you will have the opportunity to take action and make your voice heard by contacting your elected officials on the issues that matter to you. Visit the App Store on your mobile device and search Stand Firm to download FRC's Stand Firm app. Today, there are countless news outlets and so much opposing information. It can be hard to find a source you can really trust. This is why Family Research Council created the Washington Stand, an online daily news outlet that provides news and commentary on the biggest issues of the day, all written from a biblical worldview. Find credible reporting at WashingtonStand.com so that you know how to stand firm in our day. Again, stay informed by visiting WashingtonStand.com.
In today's culture, men need a battle plan, a call to biblical manhood, where they can be reminded of God's design for them to serve as provider, instructor, battle buddy, defender, and chaplain. What are the God-given roles and responsibilities for men? Family Research Council's Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin and Dr. Keenan Curtin's new book, Strong and Courageous, counters the culture's labeling of manhood and masculinity as toxic and offers a way forward for men. Purchase your copy of Strong and Courageous, A Call to Biblical Manhood at frc.org/strongandcourageous.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. The website, TonyPerkins.com, resources there for you, including a link to sign the petition to CVS and Walgreens. Vaccine advisors to the federal government are disappointed and some are angry that government scientists and executives from Moderna withheld data throughout last year's authorization discussions for their new booster. A U.S. taxpayer spent nearly $5 billion on the new booster, which has been given to more than 48 million people, despite data indicating the new booster may be even less effective than the original shots. It appears this lack of transparency has become a common occurrence, which is only eroding public trust further. With me now to talk about this, Dr. Andrew Bostom, formerly a research physician at Brown University Center for Primary Care and Prevention at Kent Memorial Hospital in Rhode Island. Dr. Bostom, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thanks for having me back, Tony. Happy New Year.
Before we get into this COVID booster data, it's great to see you out of Twitter jail now that the old regime is gone.
Yes, it was bizarre. It's maybe a tale for another time. But yes, I'm very glad to be back.
So you've written about this extensively. Can you walk us through the data that was withheld during the booster approval negotiations, that whole process?
Yeah, you know, I'm a little surprised that this story has taken so long to evolve. I mean, I guess it says something about the journalists that have refused to cover these stories. You know, Tony, these data. It's also weird how the committee that was overseeing wasn't provided these data during the hearings about approval, because in short order, the formal paper with these analyses was published back in September in the New England Journal of Medicine. And basically, they looked at the data in two ways. If you considered the entire trial group, the rates of infection in the boosted versus the non-boosted group were identical. They were about 2.5% in each group. If you looked at the group that had not had a prior SARS-CoV-2 infection, so they had no natural immunity, they actually did worse with the booster than the people that had not gotten the booster. And that result, you're now seeing some of these scientists that I think were even involved with the approval process complain about. But, you know, it's, I don't know, I'm really kind of suspicious. If the public had access to these data, as you know, in September, there should have been an outcry, at least when the paper was published, by these same, you know, if they made a mistake, if they were not given these data and somehow they went to publication after the approval had been made, then and as soon as the paper came out, they should have said, we're going to reconvene the committee because now we have the results and we should not have approved this. By the way, Tony, the other thing is, because we're in, you know, the Omicron era and the disease itself, the virus itself has attenuated so much. There weren't any severe cases in either group, whether they got boosted or not. So, you know, it's Something's missing from the story.
Right.
And then when you look at the announcement that they're extending the public health emergency for COVID for the 12th time, I mean, am I wrong in saying that the confidence of the American people in our health care system, at least at the federal level, is eroding because of stuff like this?
They're destroying it, and then the states, like my state, unfortunately, is one of them, that basically adopt a cookie cutter approach to whatever the CDC says. These local states, and you know, let's be honest, they by and large tend to be blue or bright blue states. They're destroying the confidence locally. So it's happening. It's a double dose of really instilling cynicism.
Dr. Boston, let me ask you this. I mean, you just talked about this research was published in a public journal. So how was it this was missed? I mean, they didn't talk about it. Apparently, they didn't give it, didn't spoon feed it to these advisors. Moderna experts or their executives didn't want this to come out. But how did this come to light? And is there a lack of transparency when this type of stuff is being approved?
Well, there's multiple issues. It should have. They obviously, if the data were ready to go to publication, and publication still takes, you know, at least a couple of months or something like that, they had these data available that they could have shared with the advisory committee. But when they finally appeared, I mean, what can I tell you, Tony? I blogged about them, but
media, you were in Twitter jail.
Yeah, well, exactly. I had them on my blog. But the media should have picked up on this. Why did it take CNN to do a story, yesterday or the day before, when these results were available in the New England Journal, you know, in September?
Collusion?
You've got to say that they're not journalists. They're basically functioning as press agents for the CDC, et cetera.
Yeah, it's shocking. Well, I'm grateful that there are medical professionals like yourself out there that are willing to tell it like it is, to alert the public. Dr. Boston, always great to talk with you. Thanks so much for coming on today.
Thank you, Tony. Take care.
All right.
Well, unfortunately, that's all the time we have for today. I'm David Salkeld, thanking you for being with us. And I look forward to having you back here again next week for the weekend edition of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins.
Washington Watch Weekend Edition is powered by the Family Research Council and is entirely listener supported. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234.